Daniel 1, chapter 11, text 39. This is the last verse in Lord Krishna's entrance into Dwarka. And the Sanskrit.
Tame nire bala modha skainam chano vratam raha apramana vidho bhartur ishvaram matayo yata.
Translation. The simple and delicate women truly thought that Lord Sri Krishna, their beloved husband, followed them and was dominated by them. They were unaware of the extent of the glories of their husband, as the atheists are unaware of him as the supreme controller. Purport. Even the transcendental wives of Lord Sri Krishna did not completely know the unfathomable glories of the Lord. This ignorance is not mundane, because there is some action of the internal potency of the Lord in the exchange of feelings between him and his eternal associates. The Lord exchanges transcendental relations in five ways. I'm going to describe the five rasas, but normally they're described from the devotee to the Lord, and now this is the Lord to the devotee. The Lord exchanges transcendental relations in five ways: as proprietor, master, friend, son, and lover. And in each of these pastimes, he plays fully by the potency of Yoga Maya, the internal potency. He plays exactly like an equal friend with the cowherd boys, and even with friends like Arjuna. He plays exactly like a son in the presence of Yashoda Mata. He plays exactly like a lover in the presence of the cowherd damsels, and he plays exactly like a husband in the presence of the queens of Dwarka. Such devotees of the Lord never think of the Lord as the supreme, but think of him exactly as a common friend, a pet son, or a lover, or a husband, very much dear to heart and soul. That is the relation between the Lord and his transcendental devotees, who act as his associates in the spiritual sky, where there are innumerable Vaikuntha planets. When the Lord descends, he does so along with his entourage to display a complete picture of the transcendental world, where pure love and devotion for the Lord prevail without any mundane tinge of lording it over the creation of the Lord. Such devotees of the Lord are all liberated souls, perfect representations of the marginal or internal potency, in complete negation of the influence of the external potency. The wives of Lord Krishna were made to forget the immeasurable glories of the Lord by the internal potency, though, so that there might not be any flaw of exchange. And they took it for granted that the Lord was a henpecked husband, always following them in lonely places. In other words, even the personal associates of the Lord do not know him perfectly well. So what do the thesis writers or mental speculators know about the transcendental glories of the Lord? The mental speculators present different theses as to his becoming the cause of the creation, the ingredients of the creation, or the material and efficient cause of the creation, etc. But all this is but partial knowledge about the Lord. Factually, they are as ignorant as the common man. The Lord can be known by the mercy of the Lord only, and by no other means. But since the dealings of the Lord with his wives are based on pure, transcendental love and devotion, the wives are all on the transcendental plane without material contamination. What a nice way to describe this delicate subject matter. How to see that which is fully transcendental, not with mundane vision. The distinction between the transcendental and the mundane. In Sanskrit, there are the usage of these terms, yata, tata, as this, so that it's when you see that, you can understand. This is a metaphor. Something that's known is being compared to something that's unknown. And what's unknown, in this case, is how the wives of Krishna view Krishna. We don't know that. We're getting an idea by this comparison. The comparison is being made. Yata, atheists don't understand Ishvaram Matayaha means I think. That those who are thinkers, those who are speculators, those who are thesis writers, those who are atheists trying to figure it out, they have their thesis or theses. Matayaha, they think. It's their opinion. Like Krishna uses that word about him in describing himself. He's saying, in my opinion, those who are apichesudaracharomajitemamanyabhaksadareva-samantavya mataha. It's Krishna's opinion, which means it's a fact. Because Krishna's opinion is fact. It's just a polite, gentlemanly way of saying this is a fact. Conversely, those that are speculators, they may have a matayaha, they may have a thesis about, is there God? And some have their thesis about saying there is God. Some have their thesis saying, you know, there isn't. But that which is born of mental speculation doesn't have substance. So, as much as the atheists are unaware of him as the Supreme Controller, that's the known. Then, yata, tata, so similarly, the queens, they don't know Krishna's position. And this strong word is used, mudha. That's not very complimentary. When it's used in reference to the abhajananti mam mudha manushim tanamashritam, those who think that Krishna is assumed in material form, but actually he's the undifferentiated Brahman, those persons are mistaken. Or stronger, foolish. Or stronger, rascals. Fools and rascals. Same term is being used in relation to the queens. But in this case, Prabhupada has translated it as because of simplicity. And he explains why he has translated it that way in his purport. That is, it's not their mistaken impression of their husband, Krishna, is due to the influence of the internal potency. And the internal potency is being extended to them because of their love for him. And Krishna is reciprocating with their love for him. So that they can enter into intimacy of love, which would be otherwise checked by understanding the fullness of his position. There's a nice example of this in the reunion of Krishna and Balaram with Vasudeva and Devaki. If you can recall, when Krishna was born in the prison house of Kamsa, he showed his full forearm form, helmet, garland down to his knees. Children aren't born like this. Ornaments, forearms, the symbols of Vishnu in his four hands. That's not how children appear. Full stature, effulgent personality of Godhead. They knew that he was the personality of Godhead. Still, they were influenced by the Vatsalya Rasa to the extent that although they knew, and Krishna said, I've appeared in this form just so that you will know. I'm not just a child, I'm the personality of Godhead. But then they pleaded, particularly Devaki pleaded, please assume a childlike form, because when Kamsa hears that you've appeared, he'll come to the prison and try to kill you. But if you're really small, maybe we can hide you somewhere. If he's the personality of Godhead, what's the deal? Here comes Kamsa, and Kamsa's finished, because he's the personality of Godhead. Who can harm him? But because of parental affection, please assume a childlike form. So Krishna assumed a childlike form. And Krishna was taken by Vasudeva to Gokul. And 12 years passed, and here he comes back again to Mathura. He kills Kubayapita. He kills Chanur and Mushtika, he and Balaram. And Krishna, single-handedly with his bare fist, kills Kamsa. So Krishna then went to the prison house where Vasudeva and Devaki were, and he presented himself. He and Balaram presented themselves before Vasudeva and Devaki, and they were in awe. You're the personality of Godhead. You just killed Kamsa. You appeared in the prison house. You were forearm form. You're the personality of Godhead. But Krishna wanted to be embraced by his mother and father in that mood. So it's described, Krishna then covered them so they couldn't see. That's a different kind of mudha. They can't understand. He's just our little son and he needs to go to school. He's 12 years old. He hasn't even gone to school yet. We have to do something. We're Kshatriyas, this is very bad. We'll find the best teacher and send him to the best teacher, Sandipani Muni, he's the best. So off he went to the school of Sandipani Muni. So it's the internal potency doesn't permit one to see Krishna in a way that's different from the external potency that doesn't permit one to see Krishna as he is. That distinction is being made here. Therefore, because of simplicity, and the other word is abala. There's bala, strong, and abala is delicate. Delicate and simple wives of Krishna. So, truly thought that Lord Krishna is their beloved husband. Strainam. Strainam. Stri means woman, and strainam is under the control of a woman. They thought, we're controlling Krishna. He's controlled by our love. We get what we want. We're controlling Krishna. And Chanu Vratam Raha. Anu Vrata. Anu means to follow. So Krishna would follow them. They would go to a secluded place. Krishna would go to that secluded place so he could be with them. And they controlled him. They dominated him by their womanly charms. They weren't thinking in a diabolical way. But they were thinking of him in that way. He's our husband, and he has affection for us, and out of his affection for us, there's this extra special situation where he's henpecked. They didn't misuse it. Satyabhama would sometimes do deliberately because she knew that Krishna liked it. She would sometimes just be defiant. Krishna would send for her and she wouldn't come. She's a left-wing queen. And Rukmini is the right-wing queen. She would, without question, without even having to be asked, Rukmini was so faithful. He was the best of the right-wing queens. So different moods amongst the queens. But they were seeing Krishna in the way that's being described here. They were unaware of the extent of the glories of their husband. Just like Vasudeva and Devaki, they had to become unaware. So they were covered by Yogamaya potency so that they were unaware of the unlimited glories of the personality of Godhead. And his glories are unlimited. This is a verse from chapter 11, going back to chapter 8. That's Queen Kunti's prayers in chapter 8. She also speaks about the unlimited or the avyayam, inexhaustible glories of the Supreme Lord. This is text 19 from Kunti's prayers. Being beyond the range of limited sense perception, adhoksaja. She's addressing Krishna as Krishna standing in front of her, and you are adhoksaja. You're beyond the limited range of the senses. But there he is, standing before her. But that means to understand him as he is, that which he actually is a bhokshaja. One can think of him as ordinary, that's not a problem. A mundaner can think of him as ordinary, that's not a problem. To understand who he actually is, that's beyond the range of the senses. So, being beyond the range of limited sense perception, you are the eternally irreproachable factor of the ayam. You look to be limited, you're unlimited, or eternally irreproachable. Reproachable. What does reproachable mean? You're a lawyer. What does reproachable mean?
Finding some fault in
it. Irreproachable. Krishna can do no wrong. Even if he steals, he can do no wrong. Even if he lies, he can do no wrong. Even if he does things that are immoral, they're not immoral because he's setting the standard of what is like stealing butter. It's his butter. He's irreproachable. dancing with the gopis in the dead of night. Jiva Goswami in his commentary, verse after verse after verse after verse, explains these are expansions of his own internal potency. It's not like a man dancing with another man's wife. That's reproachable. Krishna's enjoying with his own potencies. Who even knows what that is? Besides, who can do it? But that's what Krishna's doing. It's irreproachable. When Krishna runs from the battlefield and leads Jarasandha up the mountain, so Jarasandha then criticizes, ha! He's afraid of me. Krishna, who has defeated him 22 times in his entire 11 Akshohini divisions of soldiers and elephants and infantrymen and chariot drivers and thousands and thousands, single-handedly, Krishna standing on the battle, defeating, destroying the entire army. Why does Krishna run from the battlefield? It's his leela. He wants to jump off the mountain with Balaram, so he goes up the mountain. No problem. And other things that seem to be reproachable, which Krishna has given names for, Ranchor, he runs from, because a Kshatriya never leaves the battlefield. And Krishna left the battlefield, and he's glorified. He's got a special name. Makhanchor, he steals butter. He's got a special name. He performs Rasalila. He has a special name. Because he's enjoying, he's irreproachable. And his glories are avyayam, inexhaustible. So Kunti is saying, beyond the range of limited sense perception, but Hoksaja, you are the eternally irreproachable factor, avyayam, covered by the deluding energy. That's the materialists are covered by one kind of deluding energy, and the queens in Dwarka, another kind, Yogamaya energy. You are invisible to the foolish observer, exactly as an actor dressed as a player is not recognized. Mother Sachi didn't recognize her own son. A mother, a loving mother, didn't even recognize her own son on the stage because he was so much in the mood of Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune. She didn't even recognize. And it wasn't just because the costuming was really good. His mood was, and she was a very feeling woman, so she was feeling that mood, and who's that? She fainted. Your son. So as an actor is playing a part may not be recognized by the audience for who that person really is, Kunti is saying you are also not understood for who you are. And this verse in the 11th chapter is saying the same thing. The queens didn't understand him, who he was. But that's good. It's not the other kind. It's not the other kind of foolishness. Where, as Prabhupada is summarizing, people speculate. God is fill in the blank, blah, blah, blah. Just this from the mind and that from the mind and that from the mind is useless. It can't possibly touch the personality of Godhead or understanding of Him because there's only one way that that understanding is made available. He discloses it. In the beginning of the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says the same thing. Nobody knows me. Great sages, the demigods, the most learned persons in the whole of creation. Why they can't know me? Because I existed before they existed. So how can you know what exists before you exist? The answer is you can't. Unless that which existed before you exist discloses what existed before you exist, then you can know. By inference, you can, you know, perhaps, maybe. In my opinion, it could have been, or it must have been, or it was. In one graduate student class I was giving at the University of Houston, with a whole auditorium, and one of the students stood up afterwards and said, he just raised his hand, but he stood up and said, in theoretical physics, the scientists have calculated down to a few milliseconds before the Big Bang what happened. But they can't go past those few milliseconds what happened. They can describe the whole thing mathematically. He's unknowable unless through disclosure. And in the case of the situation here is Krishna has wrapped up the business in Hastinapur. Yudhisthira is now king and everything is nice again. Duryodhana is finished and the whole, his brothers and the whole, the nasty rulership that he was doing, it's over. Yudhisthira is the king. Krishna has come back to Dwarka. When he's come back to Dwarka, this is the last verse of the chapter, there's the series of personalities and scenes and situations and loving exchanges to greet him, receiving the Lord. It's a very beautiful chapter. And this is now the queen's. And amongst of all the associates, even the queens don't understand Krishna fully. They just love Krishna. And Krishna loves that they love him. And he reciprocates according to their love. So, what's important? Is it important that we know Krishna thoroughly? It's nice to want to know Krishna. But the essence of how we want to know Krishna is our love for Krishna, our submission to Krishna, our attraction to Krishna. And then, however Krishna wants, he can disclose himself to us. Appreciating his glories helps us appreciate him. Just like in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna, after realizing Krishna's identity, he asks Krishna, please give me various ways by which I can always think of you. And he describes his opulences, his vibhutis. And by thinking of the opulences of Krishna, one thinks of Krishna. There's direct method, you just think of Krishna. But we're not so simple. We're a little complicated. Just chant Hare Krishna, you're with Krishna. It's very simple. Too simple. We still chant Hare Krishna, but the mind is like somewhere else, all over the place, but except that one place. So there are things that can assist us to think of Krishna, to bring our mind to Krishna. And for the queens, they don't have that problem. They can't but think of Krishna. But because of that, back to their position, because of their intimacy, they don't need to know the unlimited glory of Krishna, of Yayam, Nalakshe Mudha Drusha. They're not, they're foolish observers in a good way, in a loving way. So, to conclude, Shukadeva Goswami, or actually this is Sutta Goswami here, is appreciating the simplicity and the delicate nature of Krishna's wives. simplicity in the sense that they didn't need to know that their husband is God. They just loved him. And in that simplicity, they understood his nature, that he is attracted to their love. He enjoys their company. He even seems to be controlled by them. They were thinking that way, at least. And Krishna likes to be controlled. He likes to be controlled by those who love him. Mother Jasoda's binding Krishna. She couldn't bind Krishna. But when he saw, because he wanted to go back to the storeroom and steal more butter, he didn't want to be tied up by a rope by her. So she couldn't bind him. But when her love was indomitable, and she was in great distress, out of motherly affection, Krishna withdrew his unlimited potencies and exhibited another potency. Exhibited his mercy potency, and then she could bind him. Wonderful lesson in the gradual development of Krishna consciousness. We practice Krishna consciousness as best we can, sadhana, bhakti, following the regulations carefully. Not with some demand from Krishna, but just simply wishing to serve him and striving in that way to keep our mind always absorbed in serving him only. And there may be obstacles in doing that, but if we remain determined, Krishna's reciprocation is for sure going to come. How it comes, that's up to him. But for sure, Krishna's reciprocation will come, because this is nature. He's loving. And we're being given a glimpse, as Prabhupada is saying in the purport, of that loving nature of the spiritual world manifest on this plane, so we can get a sense of what real love looks like. May that day come when we'll know what real love feels like and experience that same reciprocation of Krishna. Any discussion? Yeah.
So, for us, we don't really have the option to allow our covering influence to not see Krishna as the supreme and absolute truth. I mean, we're striving to only see him as that, right?
That's right. That's right.
So those relationships that Krishna had with his parents or with his wife.
Stand by.
There's nothing for us to.
That's right. What we can do is appreciate how wonderful are those devotees. How loving Krishna is when he's with such loving devotees. And we're over here, just as you said. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I want to serve him. Unconditionally, I want to serve him, at least as much as I can. Unconditionally, I want to serve him. That's what we're doing. And going, wow, look at those devotees. That's real love. That's what it looks like. As Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he wrote a whole song that the refrain is, Kabe Havi Bolo Seidi Amar. When will that day be mine? When? So it gives us a clear picture, because there are different rasas, so there are different ways that that's exhibited, but a clear picture of that love. Unalloyed love, not mixed with anything material. Unalloyed love. Not imitating, following, honoring, glorifying, appreciating. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada. He died.